Hi everyone, this is Tim, just doing a little intro to this podcast with Karan. You're going to really enjoy this podcast, but I just want to say beforehand that Kieran is a little bit less mainstream than me. I'm a little bit more mainstream, although saying that I do things like Reiki, meditation, acupuncture, and I can be quite spiritual at times, which are things that a few years ago I might have said I wouldn't have really considered myself to be or open to trying. But Kieran refers to her experiences of God and describes her spiritual awakenings and some very profound experiences. And I don't want people to disregard these out of hand because they sound a little bit far-fetched. There's a very important message here that Kieran is sharing about trauma and overcoming trauma and finding a way forward in the world to create meaning. So give this a good listen. You're going to get some stuff from it. Thank you. Hi, everyone. This is Tim. Welcome to North and South Podcasts. I am here today with Kieran Shokar-Aseh. And this is a very interesting story because it was in one of my favourite cafe restaurants in Liverpool, the Egg Cafe. Bit of free advertising there. And I saw a leaflet, which I'm holding up now for the video, but this is mainly going to be audio. And I picked it up because I thought this looks interesting because Karan had this leaflet and she offered it. Let me just read how she describes herself. She's a gifted teacher of mindset, transformation, transcendence, self-empowerment, authenticity, and self-mastery. And it immediately resonated with me in terms of the well-being side of what I'm looking to do in my own personal journey. I had a fantastic conversation with Karan a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to do at least one podcast, and hopefully that'll develop into things in the future. So, Karan, how would you describe the work that you do?
Okay, first of all, hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. And firstly, I want to say thank you, Tim. Thank you for inviting me to talk with you. I really appreciate you, reaching out. So how would I describe what I do? So I would say that I am a spiritual teacher, foremost above all everything. Then I would say I specialize in transcendental therapy and also in soul work. What that means is developing a strong connection with your own soul. Okay. So what is transcendental therapy? Because a lot of people ask me this. So transcendental therapy is basically a connection. It's a blended concept of therapy of behaviorism and humanism, philosophy, mindfulness, mysticism. And it's basically form of therapy that is orientated by spirituality. Its underlying concept is spirituality. Okay. Now, the reason for that is this. Most people don't understand that our fundamental state of being, in other words, our basic state of being is energy and spirit. Spirit meaning energy, soul. Okay. They all mean the same thing. Spirit, energy, soul. Okay. Most people don't know that. And the reason for that is that this type of information is not widely spread. It's not widely taught. So transcendental therapy is basically to transcend. It means to overcome. Okay. That's basically what it means. So basically what I do is when I get an inquiry, I always look at the childhood. Now, as you know, Tim, I've gone through a lot in my life. I was mentally, emotionally, physically, sexually abused, okay, at a very young age. And the sexual abuse stopped at a young age, but the other abuse continued. Predominantly, mostly all my life. It continued all my life. It never stopped. And so what I do with my clients is I always start with the childhood, because from my own personal experience, your parenting has a huge impact on how you become an adult and how you carry yourself through life, okay? And so I always start with the childhood. And what I'm doing there, I'm looking at positive and negative life experiences, which help me to understand the person's current belief system, okay? And then what I also do is I look at what kind of transformational experiences, either negative or positive, the individual has had, because that will show me what has brought them to their present state of where they are emotionally and mentally, okay? So childhood has a huge impact on how we grow and mature as adults. So I start with the childhood. I look at all the life experiences and I ask very specific questions. And then that allows me to elicit a picture. A picture starts to develop in my own mind of what is happening with this particular individual and why they're out of sync. Why are they, for example, having severe depression or anxiety? Why are they feeling suicidal? Why are they having, problem developing relationships with other people? So that's basically what I do. And then once I see that picture, I then relay that to my client. Because you see, Tim, you can't transform your life. You can't change yourself if you don't understand what's going on. So the first, component of transformation or transcendence is you have to understand how you've got where you are, what's happened historically, what brought you, because you weren't born like that. Human beings aren't born that way. We're not born with all the mental and emotional junk that we carry. We accumulate it through life. So once I see what's happening, I relay that to the client, and then they have this aha moment. They're like, oh my God, you know what? Yeah. And that can normally take between 4 and 6 weeks, because there's a lot of information to sift through. So it's a week by week, process. But then that information is invaluable to my client because it empowers them, because a lot of people feel like they're broken, but they're not broken. We're not broken as human beings. We just haven't been taught on how to access our own inner power. We haven't been taught what's the right way or the wrong way to live life. Most human beings don't even understand what it is to be human. So therefore, you can't be successful if you don't understand who and what you are. So transcendental therapy is really, really profoundly, fundamentally about you understanding yourself and on a deeper level. And that's what I instigate. And then I share that with my client. And then from there, once they understand what's happening, then I can start working with them and start giving them tools to actually start changing their lives. And that's how we work. And we tend to work like a team. When I work with a client, we work together as a team, basically. Yeah. So that's basically transcendental therapy.
That's brilliant. And I think that the most interesting thing about that, people can go for things like CBT, which is I have an issue with a thought and a behavior, and then you try and come up with a resolution and go, right, next time that happens, do this. But for me, my personal experience of counseling that I've had in the past is going back and looking at the experiences you've had in life, which may not be capital T trauma. But the traumatic experiences you've had, and maybe the way your brain has worked in the past, etc., and looking at that and trying to understand why. And I think that that is very, very important to break through. Because if you're just analysing the current mode of behaviour without looking at the past, you're not cutting off the source. And you can tell when someone's got low self-esteem because of so. I mean, you can try and raise the self-esteem in the present, and those strategies can be useful. But if you're not looking at why they are like that, it's very, very hard to make those more significant longer term breakthroughs. And I think that's where the transcendental part comes from as well, whereas you're looking at the past as well as the present to try and get a better future. But what you offer, obviously it all depends on the individual and you tailor things towards the individual. But your story really starts when you are 2 years of age, when you have a little bit of a spiritual awakening. Now, I've listened to your story and I found it very inspirational to listen to. And there was a lot of trauma that you spoke of, and you've alluded to some of that already. So, do you want to go back to that start for yourself? And but just before you do that, when did you start to look back at your youth? Was there a point where you said, I need to go back and look at this? And then, if you could start at the beginning, if you like, at that age of two.
I reached a point, Tim, in my 30s where I was so mentally and emotionally messed up. I'd already attempted suicide three times by then. And I reached a point where I just said, you know what? I've had enough. This is not who I am. this is not me. And I always kind of had that feeling that something is not right, and this is not me. Because I also, because of the abuse I went through, I developed severe anger issues as well. Because when you're put through such horrendous trauma and you've never done anything to warrant that, it's very unjust. And so you become very angry. Because why are you getting treated so badly? For what reason? What have you done to deserve it? You haven't done anything other than be born. So I developed really, really severe anger issues, which caused myself and my family a lot of problems. So I reached a point. So what I've noticed in myself and in my clients is a human being has to reach a point where they decide to take responsibility and accountability of their life. That has to happen. And all people that go on this journey that you're on as well, Tim. And by the way, I'm really proud of you for that, because it's not easy to make this choice. It's not. If things were easy, everybody would be doing it. Life is supposed to be a challenge, because a challenge teaches you things that easy things don't teach you. So this is why, being self-development isn't always easy. It's challenging. It's supposed to be challenging because the challenge teaches you, gives you pearls of wisdom that can't be gathered in any other way. So I reached a point where I thought, enough is enough. I want to change. So that has to happen. And then from that moment forward, I started to basically unpack everything and make wise decisions. So that's what has to happen for, and that's for anybody. You have to reach that point, okay? Otherwise, you just won't want to put work in, because it takes work. It's not easy. It takes work. It takes dedication and, self-respect to want to be a better human being, and self-love, or some form of self-love. It might not be the full gamut of self-love, but there's some kind of inkling that enough is enough. So that has to happen. So that's what happened, and that's how I, I kind of unpacked my childhood, and that was in my early 30s. I'm now 48, going on 49. So you asked about my childhood, and so sorry, what is it you want to know? You want me to start at
Yeah,
the age of two?
at the age of two, you had a bit of a profound experience which you think set you apart. Without trying to sound too grandiose about it, but you experienced something that, was quite interesting, wasn't it? So, how did that materialize, or and how did you experience it?
Okay, so I was in my grandfather's house in Birmingham in the UK, and I was playing in the hallway, and they have a huge old kind of Victorian house with those huge high ceilings and everything, beautiful hallway. And I was playing on my little tractor, and there was a red door. The main door was red, and above the red door was like a frosted glass. The kind of glass you have in your in the bathroom, right? So you can see outwards, but you can't see in. And I was playing on my tractor, minding my own business. And as I looked up, I saw the sun shining through this frosted glass. And the frosted glass took the sun and it fragmented the light. There was just like these rays of light. And I was just like, I was just mesmerized. And I just stopped and I couldn't take my eyes off this light. And then I noticed that it just got brighter and brighter and brighter. So I got off my tractor. And I was just like walking towards it, completely mesmerized that nothing else existed. Walking towards it. And I just stood there. And all of a sudden, everything went really bright. And then I turned around. And as I turned around, I wasn't in my grandfather's house anymore. I was standing. I wasn't on the earth, basically. I was standing on a huge white platform. It was so big. It was huge. It was like 10 football pitches in size, white marble platform with stairs going all the way down, and a huge marble courtyard. And I looked and I was like, wow. Wow. I mean, it was so majestic. I'm getting huge goose pimples going down my arms. When I speak powerful truth, I always get flushed with goose pimples all the way down my body. So as you can imagine, me to a two-year-old, I don't really think I knew what was going on. As a two-year-old, you don't know what's real and what's not real, what's right, what's wrong. You're just this child developing. So to me, this was just like I just stepped into fairyland or something. To me, it was natural. I didn't know it wasn't natural. So I'm standing there, and I'm looking around, and I'm absolutely in awe of everything. And then I turn around, and then I'm looking ahead, and then I turn around because I get this intuition to turn around. And as I turn around, I notice There's and I mean, I remember, I mean, I'm almost 49 and I remember it like it's yesterday, that this you know, out of body experience, if you like. And there was a force field behind me and you could see it. It was, you know, in front of me there was nothing, but behind me there was like this clear, but like with a bluey tinge force field. And something told me that I need to, you know, go through that. But before I went through it, I also noticed that on either there was a chamber, like an invisible room beyond that, and there were two guards on either side. And Tim, you should have seen these guys. They were like 10, 15 foot tall, built like brick houses with very, very Egyptian-esque, with four faces of different animals in some kind of African origin. The muscles on muscles of this world, and they look very intimidating. You know, they were not something you want to mess with. And each of them had a huge gold staff in one arm and the other one in the opposite arm. And they had white robes, very Romanesque robes with like gold collars and gold cuffs. Okay. Obviously, security guards, but not the kind of security guard you ever want to mess with. So I went through the force field and then a door opened and I went into a chamber. And when I walked into the chamber, in the middle of the chamber was the most immense bright white light I have ever seen in my entire life. And as I walked in, its energy permeated through my body and it went through one side and out the other. And I almost fell over backwards because the force was so powerful. But the force was unconditional love. And I was in bliss. It was like, it was almost like this slow motion of almost falling backwards. And it was like the most euphoric feeling of unconditional love. It was just like, oh my God, this is so good. You know, that kind of feeling that you've never felt anything like it. And I was there and I was just like, oh my God. And then I looked at this light and then it started to talk to me and I realized that this is God. So, as you can imagine, very powerful. And then I spoke with God for a little while. It shared some information with me. And then it said, okay, I want you to go. Your brother is going to come in a minute and he's going to come and collect you and he's going to show you around. So I said, okay. And then I said goodbye to God. And I want to make a point here to people. One of the biggest mistakes that human beings make is they feel and believe that God is a human being. God is not a human being. God is an energy construct. And that is something I was very clearly shown. And it can take any form it wants to. So I walked back through the force field and I came back out into this platform. And walking up the steps was the most handsome, gorgeous, good-looking man I've ever seen in my entire life. He had these beautiful white robes on, long brown goldeny hair, a beard, and the most amazing eyes. And I was just like, wow, okay, who's this? And he looked at me and he came and he's just his demeanor, his the majesticness of it. And I could feel his unconditional love. And he said, hello. He said, I'm Kuthumi and I'm your brother and I'm going to show you around. Many years later, I found out that Kuthumi is one of the ascended masters. And I'm like, okay, fine. I didn't know that at the time. So we walked down the stairs. And as I'm walking down the stairs, he's got my little hand in his hand. And we're walking down the stairs, and people are passing us. And as they pass us, everybody looks at you and nods. Nobody walks past you with ignoring you. Not the way we live on this earth, where you walk past about 20, 30 people every day, and you don't even look them in the eye, you don't even say hello. None of that nonsense. Everybody that walks past you acknowledges you. And there's this kind of telepathy of, you know, peace be kind of like, you know, peace be with you, or kind of hello, you know, like a greeting. And you can feel their energy and your energy interact. So very conscious beings. So we walked down. And we're in this courtyard and I'm walking around, and it's words don't do it justice, really. It was just the most amazing, beautiful place I've ever seen in my entire life. And then we reached a part of this area where, which kind of looked like an airport, but the most amazing airport you've ever seen, ultra modern. And then Kuthumi looked at me and he said, I can't go any further with you now. You have to go the rest of the way on your own. Another person is going to come and they're going to help you. And I said, okay. And then he hugged me, and this lady came who was also dressed all in white. She took my hand and we started walking. And as I turned around, I could see him and he was crying. And I suppose he was crying because, unknown to me, I was being sent on a very powerful journey. And I think he knew what lays before me. Obviously, I didn't. If I did, I don't think I would have wanted to come to this planet, if I'm really honest. So you could see he was crying and he, waving, and I waved at him. And then I focused forward again, and we moved walking forward into this part of this area now, which looks kind of like an airport. And you could see like gates, certain like airport terminal gates, okay? And people of all different colors, in all very unique clothing as well, lining each of these gates. And then we came to another gate, and the woman I was with just stopped. And she didn't look at me, she just looked ahead. And I was standing to the right of her. And I looked up at her, and I knew straight away that there was like a kind of those, if you're a fan of Star Trek like I am, you'll know this, those little doors that slide open in Star Trek. It was like that. And then this door slid open, and all I could see was just blackness. And my instinct told me, my intuition told me, you've got to walk through that. So I thought, okay. And I knew it was safe. So I walked through. And as soon as I walked through, I was in a like a water tunnel, and going this way and that way. And as I was in this tunnel, all different kinds of colors of lights were flashing at me. And it was like, and again, if you're a Star Trek fan, it's like being in warp speed and going through a time to traveling. And it was like, vroom, vroom. And I was like, this way, this is brilliant, this is great, this is great. I was having the time of my life, as a kid, it was wonderful. And then all of a sudden, everything was red. And all I could hear was the dun da da dun da dun da da dun da da dun da da. And I'm thinking, what's this? And then I could hear my mum's voice. And then I realized that I'm actually in the stomach of my mum. And I had this really strong feeling of fear. And I could sense that my mum was really, really scared. Years later, when I was in my 20s, I said to my mum, why were you scared of giving birth? She nearly spat a tear out. She said, what? What are you talking about? I said, why were you scared of giving birth? She went, how do you know that? I said, doesn't matter how I know, but why? And she just burst out crying. It took her about an hour and a bit to gather herself. You have to excuse me, I'm a bit emotional. She said, when I got pregnant with you, Kieran, before I got pregnant, I was told that I can't have children because I had a problem with my heart. I had a hole in my heart. And unknown to me, I had actually got pregnant and I was actually quite far gone with you. And they said to me, either you're going to die or the child's going to die. You've got to have an operation on your heart. And she said, and I was petrified because I was pregnant with you. And she said, well, so what they had to do was instead of going in at the front to cutting my heart open, they had to go in through the back and to do the heart operation to not cause you any discomfort because I was so close to giving birth to you. She said, and that's why I was so scared. She said, how the hell do you know that? She said, nobody knows that. I said, if I was in your stomach, I felt it. So anyway, coming back to the story, I'm in the mother's stomach and I remember her fear. I remember my mother's voice. I remember my dad's voice. And then all of a sudden, I was back in the hallway of my grandfather's house. And that's from that moment, I knew that I am very different, that I've been sent here for a reason. Now, I didn't know the reason at that time, but I knew that I am different. And from that age, that's when God made itself known to me. And basically, yeah, that's basically what happened at the age of 2 years old.
That's very profound, isn't it? And if you think about what you were then later to go through and what you may well have already been through in terms of the emotional neglect, the physical abuse, the sexual abuse, etc., was the journey, the difficult journey you were going to go through, do you think that that is what was hinted at inside that experience, that this is going to be difficult? And I mean, you must have struggled to find the words, but it's only later that that kind of makes sense. For a young mind as well to experience something like that, it's very, very profound, isn't it?
Well, you see, Tim, human beings are powerful. We're very, very powerful beings, but we never come upon that because it's never shared with us. And so when Kuthumi was crying, he knew what lay ahead. That a human life, being human, is not easy for anybody. It's not easy for a spiritual teacher like myself. It wasn't easy for my brother Jesus, or Yeshua, if you call him by his correct name. It wasn't easy for great leaders, like Kuthumi and the great ascended masters that have been and gone. They're powerful beings, and it's not easy for them. So imagine what it's like for just mere mortals. Being human is tough, it's challenging. And the reason for that is because there's a lot of reasons, okay? There's many reasons. But yeah, so when you're correct, he knew that it was going to be tough. I'm going to be really honest in this podcast, okay? Because for many years I withheld my identity because I'm not a person who naturally is drawn to the limelight. I'm just not that kind of person. I'm a very private person. I don't like people really knowing my business because all my life, what's happened, Tim, is, when I walk into a room, because I have very unique energy, a lot of people are drawn to me. And sometimes what happens is that people want to put me on a pedestal and worship me. And I abhor that. I am not here to be worshipped. And nor do I want to be. I am here to help humanity evolve. That's it. And just like my brother before me, Yeshua, he did not want to be worshipped either. True spiritual teachers and leaders, we are not here for that kind of BS, that nonsense. It doesn't mean anything to me. I'm here to empower people, to show them who they really are, so that they can reach the same level as myself and my brother Yeshua. And that's what he was talking about. His teaching and my teaching are actually very similar because we come from the same bloodline, the same energy, which is centers here to be of service to humanity.
Very good stuff. Do you know the trauma then? How did that trauma manifest itself early in your life? What kinds of memories have you got of that early trauma that came later?
So I was born into a family that was exceptionally dysfunctional. My parents are both from Northern India. They're from the Punjab. And I was born in Birmingham in the UK. My sister was born there as well. And my family, my mother and father, my mother came from Northern India to solely marry my father. They had an arranged marriage and they didn't even see each other. They didn't even, I mean, I'll never get over this. They didn't even know what each other looked like until the night of the wedding. Can you even imagine that, Tim? And I think my dad was overjoyed because my mum's stunning. She's a very good-looking woman. And my father, we must have been like, woohoo, I've hit the jackpot here, But yeah, they didn't even see each other before the night of the wedding. And then she came right over from India to just that. So she didn't speak any English. And my father was a heavily abused man. His father, my grandfather, my paternal grandfather, and excuse my language, was one of the most disgusting pieces of crap to have walked this earth. He was a paedophile. And I found out in my life that he had raped many women, children, boys, and girls. And he started sexually abusing me, my grandfather, when I was about 3 or 4 years old. And I wasn't penetrated or anything like that. It was more kind of, I mean, I don't really want to get too in depth here, but it was bad enough too, in the fact that obviously any form of abuse where somebody takes advantage of you in any way will have an effect on your mind, okay? Because it's not the right way to behave, okay? So that's where the sexual abuse started, and it happened right under the noses of my parents because my parents were very ignorant. They were very young. They had me when they were 20. Okay. So they were children themselves. So children having children is normally not a wise idea because you haven't lived life, you don't have life experience. So what basically happened was because of this very toxic background and energy in this family, and my grandfather also used to starve me as well. So my parents would go out to work and he'd pick me up like a drag like a doll, like a rag doll, and throw me on the couch and say, stay there, don't you move. And I'd have to stay there all day. I wasn't allowed. I remember one time I walked over to the fridge because I was hungry, and I was yanked by my arm to the point where I thought my arm was going to come out of its socket. I was 3 years old, 4 years old, and then picked up by my arm like a rag doll and thrown on the couch. And I remember that very clearly, very clearly. My mother was probably a godsend for my father. because my mother was very powerful. She was a very powerful woman, kind of woman that doesn't take any nonsense. And so she could see that my father was very abused. Now, my father was heavily physically abused. He used to have the living daylights kicked out of him by his dad. And he was beat up so many times, so severely, that he developed epilepsy as a result because of the brain trauma that he went through. So that was my father. My mother came from a family where many children before her had died. There had been seven children before her that had died because in India, northern India in that time, there just wasn't the medical supplies. You know, she came from a rural village from northern India, and she was treated like a princess because she was the first child after seven that actually had lived past a certain age. I think the age was about four or five. So she was treated like a princess, you know. And so her mother, my maternal grandmother, wanted her to come to the UK so that she would have a better life than would that she would have had probably living in India. So that's the background of my parents. My mother had a lot of mental and emotional stuff as well. So the two of them combined, and because they were so, you know, as you can imagine, when you live in a country and you don't speak the language clearly, you can't really fully function in it. And so I think what happened with my parents, though, was that they really wanted to preserve their culture. And so they brought me up in a very, very strict way, which was, and the other thing was, obviously, I was their first child, so they had no experience of bringing up a child. And then, you know, to those of you who have children, it doesn't come with a rule book on how to do it. You just, you know, it's trial and error, right? And so this is why so many parents make so many mistakes. And so my parents didn't pick up on the fact that I was a very intelligent child. I'm a very intelligent person in that I have very powerful observational skills, and I've been gifted with that. And so when I was born, I wanted to know what everything. I was like touching everything, cutting everything. I used to take the curtains down and cut them and make clothes out of them. I remember when I was 9 years old, I took the vacuum apart to see how it works, because my brain was like, "Where's all that dirt going? What's happening with it?" So I took it apart, and my mother came in, and she was horrified, and she beat me up. She slapped me. She said, "What are you doing? You naughty child." And I cried my eyes out. And then when she went out of the room, I put the whole thing back together again. And she came back and she saw, she was like, she couldn't believe it. But they didn't know that. They didn't realize that they had such a child on their hands. And so they took my intelligence as being naughty. So I was constantly hit. I was hit a lot. So I had a lot of physical punishment. I had the sexual abuse. And then as I started to grow, my mother and father, what they really wanted me to do was comply to everything they want. So if they said jump, then I should jump. If they say sit down, then I should sit down. Now, I've always been a person, Tim, that I've always had a very strong inner core. Now I know why, because of my lineage. At the time, I didn't know why. Why am I so powerful? I didn't know, but this is why. And I'm not the type of person to comply with anything, especially if I can see that it's not just. There's no way I'm going to do it. And so what my parents didn't realize is that I have this powerful gift of observation. So when I observe a human being, I can see both their conscious behavior, so the behavior that they're aware of, and their subconscious behavior, their part of themselves that they're not aware of. I can see both simultaneously. I can see how their mind is ticking and why they're behaving in the way they are. And they didn't know that I could do that. When I looked at my parents, I remember when I was about 3 years old, looking at my parents and being horrified because I could see both their light and their darkness, their shadow. And it horrified me because where I come from, as I explained, that doesn't exist. There's only light. And it's only in this earth that human beings have both light and dark. In above, in heaven, if you want to call it, for a better world, you don't have that. You only have light. So it was a huge shock to me. And I never got over that shock. And I think it really separated me from them. And from that point, I didn't really ever fully trust them, because I couldn't, because of what I was seeing. And so, as you can imagine, it caused a lot of problems. And they didn't know how to bring me up. They were very strict, had a lot of corporal punishment. When I was 16, my father beat me so badly, I almost died. You name it, it happened. I was locked in the house. I ran away. My first run away from home when I was 8 years old, 9 years old. I ran away again then when I was 16. So I went through it. I literally went through hell. Most of my life, it never stopped. It never stopped. They never stopped abusing me. A lot of gaslighting. I wasn't allowed to speak. I wasn't allowed to confront them. But you know what? I've got to say one thing, Tim, is that they tried with all their might to make me comply to what they wanted me to be. And I'm very proud to say that I never did it. And till this day, I've never done it to anything. And yeah, so you can imagine this. It was like World War III all the time.
Yeah, I can understand that. So you ran away three times, didn't you, when you were young? And you've already mentioned that there were suicide attempts. How old were you when they occurred?
Which the suicide attempts.
Suicide attempts, yeah.
The first one was in my early 20s.
Yeah. So it's a little bit later because when you're young, you don't know what's going on, do you? I think when you get into your 20s, all of a sudden, you start thinking, wait there. Yeah, that's something that I experienced in my 20s, because when you're in your teenage years and your childhood years, it's very hard to really understand or analyze anything. But you had an out-of-body experience again when you were 16, didn't you? Was that kind of a progression on your earlier spiritual experience?
So basically what happened was from the age of two, when I had that spiritual experiences, I've had them my entire life. So at 2 years old, I had, at 9 years old as well. And at 9 years old, well, 8, 9 years old, when I ran away, I'll just tell you that one. What basically
Yeah.
happened there was I just had enough, being treated so badly. I think I started to go into depression, if I'm really honest, from probably 8 years old, because there was no love. There wasn't any love in the family. I was left alone a lot. My mum and dad worked all the time. So I was brought up with babysitters all the time. And there wasn't any love. I couldn't talk to anybody. No, nobody said, I love you. Nobody really hugged me. It was horrendous. It was so bad. And so when I was 9 years old, I just couldn't take it. And what I used to do, oh, this is awful. I used to have a small bedroom for guests. In our old house in Huddersfield. I grew up in Huddersfield in West Yorkshire. And they used to have this beautiful family home. And in the small bedroom, they had this beautiful white cupboard of bedding. And I used to go and hide in this cupboard and burrow in the bedding because the smell of Lenore, I'll never forget the smell of Lenore, of that fabric conditioner and the warmth of the bedding. It was like a hug. So I used to just mull myself in there and just lie there for hours. And then my mother would find out because it'd all be messy and then I'd get beaten up. So it was just, that was my life. So I ran away one night. I was 9 years old and I came downstairs. My parents and my sister were in the small room. And in those days, what we used to do was in the houses, and I'm sure you're not, you're aware of this, the big front room was for guests. And it only got opened when the neighbors came around or somebody important came around for a cup of tea. So you didn't ever enter that room, God forbid that you should ever go and touch that room because it was like out of bounds. So everybody lived in the back room, and that's where we watched TV. And so I walked down into the kitchen, and I opened the back door room, and I could see my mum, my dad, and my sister glued to the TV set. And the light was off, and it was just the flickering light of the TV on their faces, and they're all like that, like zombies, the three of them glued to this TV set. And I thought, you know what? I'm sick of these people. I've had enough. I'm gone. I'm going. That's it. So I put on my coat, and we used to live in Huddersfield at the top of this hill, and at the bottom of the hill was a forest. And I was a real tomboy. I used to play in the forest all the time with my friends and climb trees. So I knew of the forest really well. So I thought, right, that's where I'm going to go. And I never knew what was on the other side of the forest because it was actually quite a large area. So I never really went to the other side, but I thought, I'm going to just keep going. So I entered the forest. It must have been about 6, 7 o'clock in the evening. It must have been about 7 o'clock after tea time, it was after my dad had something to eat. It must have been 7, 8 o'clock, something like that. I had my hood on and I just kept walking. And I must have walked a fair way, because I was just, that was it. I just was so angry, so upset at the way I was being treated. And I carried on walking and walking and walking. And then all of a sudden, there was a huge cornfield, huge, in front of me. And I stopped and thought, and then I heard the voice of God, and I heard God say, "Where are you going?" I'm like, "I'm going home. I don't want, I'm going home. And God's like, yeah, but you are home. And I'm like, no, don't you do that with me. No, you know, I know who you are. I know who you are. Don't you tell me I'm home. This is not my home. I want to go home. I want you to bring me home. I don't want to be here no more. I don't like these people. These people are horrible. These people treat me badly. I want to come home. And he's like, Kieran, you are at home. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And I wasn't having any of it. I wouldn't budge. I'm like, no, I'm not going back. And I must have been there for ages. And God trying to talk sense into me, trying to say, look, you're 9 years old. You've got no food. You've got no water. You've got no money. It's not safe. You have to go back. And I'm like, no, I'm not going back. And after about, I don't know, seemed like forever, I gave in because I knew, of course, I've got to go back. Where the hell am I going to go? A 9-year-old kid, where am I going to go? So off I went back, completely defeated. I don't know how long I was gone, but it felt like hours and hours. And when I got back to him and I walked into that kitchen and I opened that door, nobody even knew that I'd left. There were all three of them sitting there like flipping zombies. And I was heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken. And it was years later I realized they don't grow corn in West Yorkshire. I didn't know that, you know. So yeah, so I had all these experiences. So at 16, another similar thing. I was in my bedroom, and by now we're living in Liverpool. My parents moved to Liverpool when I was 12. We moved to Scouseland, and that was interesting, you know, because when I first moved to Liverpool, I couldn't even understand the accent. I used to look at people's faces and think, I don't understand what you're saying. What are you saying? You know, and I went to school at Liverpool as well. I went to Notre Dame High School. So those of you Scousers, you know Notre Dame. I'm a Notre Dame girl, and I went to high school there. And I think it's changed now. They bulldozed it, and it's a mixed school now. But
Yeah,
I
it's a
had, you know, quite,
new building and it's mixed, yeah.
So I loved school because school was an escape for me. So I loved school because it meant that I had didn't have to be at home. So. Sorry, you said what happened when I was 16. So 16, I was in my bedroom in the house in Liverpool. We lived in McGull. I was about to go to sleep. My bedroom was pitch black, and then something caught the corner of my eye on the left-hand side. And as I looked, I saw the silhouette of a man, and it was darker than the darkness in the room. And I went, I caught my breath, and I was 16 because you don't go to bed and there's a guy standing in your bedroom. And it stepped forward and it telepathically said to me, I'm not here to harm you. You don't need to be afraid. Because obviously I got very scared. Like, what's this? And okay, I calmed myself down because I've always had a powerful intuition. So I thought, okay, yeah, he's telling the truth. Excuse me. He said, I have something very powerful I need to show you. I've been sent by God to show you something very important. Will you come with me? And I'm like, and I think about it, I thought, okay, yeah, he's telling the truth. Okay. I said, okay, yeah. And in that moment, I started to lift out of the bed. And I'm lifting and lifting and lifting. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, yeah. And then as I looked down, got the shock of my life because my body's on the bed, but I'm not. And I'm like, what the? Because I've never had an out-of-body experience before in that way. So I was like, whoa. And I'm just lifting and lifting, got no control of it, and went through the house. Kept going and kept going, and then ended up leaving the actual planet. Moved out of the planet, saw the planet in the distance, and then we moved above in the planet, and we came to complete pitch blackness. Complete pitch blackness. And this energy, this silhouette, this spirit, or whatever it was, it told me its name was Kryon, by the way. And I believe there's a man who channels an energy called Kryon. But it said its name was Kryon, this entity, whatever it was. And so it's sitting cross-legged in front of me, and I'm sitting behind it, and I'm like, whoa, this is so cool. And then in that moment, I realized, I was like, hold on a minute, there's something here. And I could feel like something supporting my weight. And in that moment, I realized that there is no such thing as nothing, that even in the nothingness, there is something. So nothing does not actually exist in terms of spiritual stuff. And then what happened was, in the corner of my eye, as I looked ahead, I saw a pinprick of a light. And I was able to pick it up because it was just complete pitch blackness. So I could see this really pinprick of a light in the distance. And I looked again and I could see it was getting bigger and bigger, bigger and bigger. And I was like, what is that? And as I'm thinking, what is that? All of a sudden they were really bright, and there was like a really loud clap. Like it nearly broke my eardrums. It was so loud. And then all of a sudden, I could see like clouds and flashes of light. And then all of a sudden, like something started shaking in front of me, and then you could see like this sphere starting to develop. And basically, what was happening was I was being shown the birth of the Earth, the planet being born. And there was all these gases, there were all these lights, different shadow colors. It was amazing, like the most amazing firework display you've ever seen in your life. And then this planet forming, and then all of a sudden I was zoomed in, and as I zoomed in, there was nothing, and then there were mountains, and then there was water, and then the water started to flicker, and as the water flickered, I could see these little beings in the water, like little amoeba, and then they turned into other creatures. The creatures turned into other creatures, the wildlife, the plant life, everything. I was shown how everything was created, and I was shown all the different ages of humanity. And then I was shown the planet blow up, and then I woke up in my bed, and as you can imagine, I was absolutely petrified and horrified at what I'd just seen. And then I heard the voice of God. And the voice of God said, "Do you want to do something about this, Kira? I'm going to give you 3 days to think about this." And after 3 days, I'd like an answer. As you can imagine, I was beside myself in those 3 days. The weight of that question was one of the most horrific things I've probably ever gone through. And I thought to myself, if I don't say yes, how am I ever going to ever look at myself in the face ever again? How am I going to live with myself? So after 3 days, when God came back, I said yes. But if I'm truly, truly honest, I didn't really understand what that meant. I didn't really understand what I was actually saying yes to. I didn't understand what the Pandora's box that I was opening. And from that moment, my life completely changed.
So you've got a series of kind of spiritual awakenings throughout your youth with a background of trauma. And then you've discussed with me, we'll talk about the suicides, which attempted to come a little bit later. You've have said to me that between 16 and 20, you're having these kind of inner debates within yourself to do with God, to do with your role in the world, that the world, there's a lot of evil in the world, that you need to make it better, that you're here to help people. Did that gradually emerge in that time, or was there a kind of a light switch moment, or was it something that kind of holistically developed?
What emerged in that time?
This idea that you're on a spiritual journey to help others, did that emerge gradually, or was there a certain light switch moment where you said, right, now I'm clear about it?
Emerged over time. I didn't understand anything, if I'm honest, because I was so young. I was 16. I mean, I was a 16-year-old who was heavily abused. If I'm honest, but when I said yes, after what happened was, I said after that, I started to get downloaded so much information, and it was way too much for me. And so between the ages of 17 and 19, I was constantly downloaded with this information. And God was telling me, "I've sent you here on this spiritual mission. You're going to change the earth. You're going to be an instigating factor in changing humanity. You're going to do this, you're going to do that." And I was like, I don't think so. No, hold on a minute. I don't think so. Excuse me, but I'm a piece of crap. Don't you know that? I'm a piece of crap. Excuse my language, Tim, but I'm a piece of shit. And you're telling me that I'm going to help humanity evolve? No, I'm sorry, but you've got the wrong person. That's not me. I can't do that. And so this started this really powerful tussle between God and myself, because God's telling me all these amazing things and I'm having none of it. I'm like, I don't think so. No, leave me alone. I don't want to do that. I'm an idiot. I'm a piece of shit. I don't even deserve to be alive, because I was self-loathing because of all the abuse I'd gone through. I was a mess. And I'm being told that information. I mean, I was barely getting by day at this point. You know, I'm 17 and I'm barely getting through. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that I was becoming so distorted because I wasn't dealing with the pain and suffering because I didn't know. I was so young. So I didn't know what was going on. So it unfolded gradually. And when I turned, by the time I was 19, I couldn't deal with it anymore. It was way too much that I could handle. So I was like, I need to switch this off. Switch it off, please. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. And thankfully, it was switched off. And for about 3 years, there was nothing. But what happened then is I started to feel really empty. And then I realized that I'm in a situation now, this is in my early 20s, that I can't live with what God is telling me. And it seems that I can't live without it either. And I came to about, it was probably about in my 21, 20, I was thinking, how old was I? It was in my mid-20s when I did the, early, sorry, early 20s when I did the first suicide attempt. And it's shocking to me that I didn't die, you know, because I should have. And the 3 times I've survived, it's shocking because I shouldn't actually be alive. I shouldn't. Because what the way I attempted suicide, you wouldn't survive it. You wouldn't survive it. But I have. And obviously that's being done on purpose as well. So, you know, I've not been allowed to kill myself. And thankfully, thank God for that. What a waste of life that would have been. And so after that, after I went through some self-healing, and by the way, at this point, I've had no counseling still. I've had no counseling. Nobody's helped me. Nobody's even talking to me. I still haven't talked to anybody. I'm dealing with all of this on my own. Okay. And that's when basically, slowly, no, sorry, excuse me. It wasn't until in my late 30s that I started to really then explore. Because God never stopped. It never stopped saying to me that you are this person. It never stopped. So after about what, 15 years, if you like, of this power struggle with God, God telling me you're going to do this, I'm like, no, mate, I'm not going to do it, mate. You need to piss off and leave me alone. I'm not doing it. You've got the wrong person. Leave me alone. But because it was so relentless, after about more or less 15 years, I thought, okay, this has never gone away. I'm now ready to look at this. I'm ready to explore this. And if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to become this person, then I've got to do it in a way that I'm 100% sure, because there is no way that I am going to involve myself in other people's pain and suffering, because that's dangerous. I'm not going to do that if I am not the real McCoy. So then I went back to, that's when I then went on this very powerful self-development journey to understand myself. Who am I? And why am I like this? Why is this power coming from? Why have I been chosen to be like this? Because I'm not bloody special to anybody else. I'm just normal as far as I'm concerned. Okay. But yeah, I mean it was tough. It was tough.
I can imagine. Now, you're now in your 30s, and you've said that you were having some problems with smoking and alcohol and drugs, etc., at around this time, or maybe a bit earlier. And then you decided that you needed to rebuild your physical health, but also you went to see someone for the first time for some talk and therapy. Were they close together, or were they separate events, or did they happen at around the same time?
So after the second suicide attempt, basically what happened was, it was so I landed in a very, very severe depression, very severe. It came upon me. At the time, it seemed like it came upon me like that, but it didn't. It was years in the making. It was just building momentum, and I didn't know that. And so when it actually caught up with me, it was such a powerful force that it literally was like somebody taking the rug from under my feet, and I just went, boom, you're out, game over. I started to lose my hair. I started to suffer with vertigo. I started to suffer with agoraphobia. I went from a size 10 to a size 16. I had boils all over my face. I mean, you name it, it happened. I literally turned into a vegetable.
Sorry, how old were you at this point?
This is, I was in my late 30s.
Late
I mean, a
30s,
mid
yeah.
to late 30s. Yeah.
I mean,
So,
mine happened when I was 29. Not quite the same as you, but my big, like, whoa, you can't do this anymore, mate, fall over, was like February 2007. I was 29. It was a very, very profound moment. But as you say, it had so many origins that were overlapping. It's hard to differentiate what's what. So what happened then after you went into this depression? You've come out with all these physical symptoms and
yeah, I stopped. I mean, I couldn't do anything. I was homebound, couldn't work. So I didn't even know that I was depressed. I didn't know what was going on. And so I went to the doctors, and then the doctor did, and took me a long time to actually get to the doctors. I was homebound for 3 months. Didn't leave the house for 3 months because I couldn't. When I tried to leave the house, everything would spin and I'd fall backwards. So what happened was, I thought, Kieran, you've got to get out of this house. You've got to go to the doctor. You've got to get out. So one day, got ready, went out, and I just basically held on to the walls as much as I could. And then when I got to this main street, there's a crossing, and I couldn't cross it because I can't stand straight. I fall over. So I had to ask somebody, I'm so sorry, I'm not well. Can you please help me cross the road? So they helped me cross the road. They said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to the doctor. They said, come on. I'm going to walk you to the doctors. So they walked me. Holy moly. Got to the doctor's, Tim. What a nightmare. The doctor did not want to listen to what I was telling her. It was like I was speaking flipping Swahili. She wouldn't hear me. And all she was concerned with was pumping me full of pills. It makes me so angry. It makes me
Yeah.
so angry. She didn't care one iota at all. All she wanted to do was build her quota of people that she's put on this medication. And she was ruthless. No empathy, no sympathy. And I was so battered and beat down at this point, I had no energy to fight her. So I just took the prescription. But in my own mind, I thought, I'm not taking that medicine. I'm not taking that. I don't want, I just, something in me did not want to take these pills. So I went back home. It just kept getting worse. I wasn't getting better. It just kept getting worse and worse. And then one day I was in the mirror in the bathroom, and I'll never forget this. As you know, when you go through depression, it's very difficult to look after yourself. It's difficult just to get out of bed, never about clean your teeth or wash your face. You can't do anything. You don't have the will to do anything. And so one day I was in the bathroom, and I was looking at my face, and I was looking at my face. I saw something flickering in my eyes, and I thought, what's that? And I got closer to the mirror, and I'm looking, and I could see a flame in my eyes flickering like this. I, what is that? And then I heard the voice of God. And then God said, Kieran, you're going to get through this. You're going to get through this, and it's going to be the making of you because you're a very powerful person. Okay, you can do this. And in that then, I just broke down and started crying. And then from that moment, I think that actually happened before I went to the doctors, actually. In my timeline, that actually happened before. And that's what actually spurred me on to get the confidence to get out of the house and go for it, you know? And then I enrolled in. And then what happened was the doctor did do one thing, thank God. She enrolled me into 6 weeks of talking therapy. I've got to find this woman's name because I need to track this woman down. This woman was pivotal in my journey. I can't remember her name. Every time I try to say her name, it's almost on the tip of my tongue, but it doesn't come out, and I've got to find her. I'm going to find her. And I had 6 weeks of talking therapy with her, CBT, and she also introduced me to tapping as well. Okay. She
Just
opened
for
my eyes.
people who are listening, tapping's a form of coping mechanism that can help you to deal with difficult experiences and memories. And there's a lot of science behind it. Just wanted to say that. Keep going, Cara.
Yeah, tapping is very good. For those of you who are interested in it, really check it out. You know, it can be very helpful. She really opened my eyes because talking to her showed me, wow, I can get relief from this. Because it showed me that actually talks, I'd never, because I was in my late 30s now, and I'd never talked to anybody about what I'd gone through. Not the sexual abuse, not the physical abuse, not the mental abuse, not the emotional and mental neglect, none of it. And all of a sudden, I started talking and couldn't stop crying. Boy, did I cry, because it all just came flooding out. Years and years of this abuse. And she was amazing. My God, was this woman amazing. One of the best counselors. I've never met a counselor as good as her. And I've got to say, look, there are some really shitty counselors out there, and psychologists and psychiatrists, but there are some very, very good ones. And so, to those of you who are listening to this, please, when you go to find counseling, please choose wisely. Take your time to choose somebody that you connect with. If you don't get a good feeling with your counselor, don't work with them. It means it's not,
Absolutely, yeah.
they're not right for you. Okay.
Absolutely.
This woman was amazing. She was so compassionate. She was so patient. And she wasn't one of those counselors who just listens to you and then just basically regurgitates what you've just said. She wasn't doing that. She was genuinely listening to what I was saying and asking me questions and engaging with me. She really opened my eyes to you can heal yourself. With the correct support, you can actually heal yourself. And there are many different modalities. And this is the other thing I want people to know. Just because one form of therapy doesn't work for you, don't give hope, don't give in, don't give up hope, because it just means that modality of therapy isn't for you. There's
Here,
millions of different things you can do. So you've just got to find something that works best for you, basically. Yeah.
absolutely. I just want to echo that sentiment. And also, when I first went to see a counselor when I was 30, maybe 29, I went into this room and I was like a man who didn't like speaking about emotions. And I went into this room and just cried and let out this kind of 15 minutes of stuff. Stuff that I didn't even know I was going to talk about. And this counselor was so attentive and cared. It was such a cathartic experience. I felt like I was just unloading all that burden. And this person was saying to me, "That's okay. That's okay to feel like that." And honestly, I cannot say what that did to me and how that set me off on a journey. So I just like to echo those sentiments. So you did
Yeah.
this talk and therapy for 6 weeks, and so was that a breakthrough moment for you in terms of sorting out your thoughts, as it were?
It was breakthrough, in, not in sorting out my thoughts, but it was a breakthrough in terms of showing me that I can break free from these constraints of my pain and my past, and that I can break free from it, you know. I mean, I have to say that the 6 weeks were nothing. I went once a week for 6 weeks, six sessions. We'd only just got started and it was over. And then it was horrendous because I needed consistent support for at least a year. And then what happens on the NHS is they only give you 6 weeks. I don't know if that's changed now, but they normally only give you 6 weeks. And then obviously I was on benefits because I was basically vegetable. I was in no position to do anything. And so I couldn't work. So I couldn't afford a lot of the counseling prices because my benefits didn't cover it. It was either pay my rent and pay my food or have counseling. So if I had counseling, then I would have ended up on the street. So what it did for me was it instigated my self-development journey, because I then took control where this counselor left off. I went on from there on my own, and I started to basically self-develop. I took over my own healing process. Yeah.
And that's important, isn't it? Because ultimately the aim of counseling is to help someone to see things for themselves. And that might sound very textbooky, but once you start to turn the lens on yourself, you've mentioned a lot of what might be called Jungian stuff to do with Carl Jung, the idea of the shadow self that's there that you don't dare look into. Once you can start turning the lens and see your shadow self and say, right, what is it about you that you don't acknowledge that maybe we need to look at? Once you can start doing that, and you'll never see completely into the shadow because there's things that you'll miss. That is probably the most empowering thing I've ever done, where I can say, yeah, I have got weaknesses. Yeah, I've got strengths as well. And I've got things which you want to work on and things which you need to deal with. Because that's the first step. You've got to acknowledge it first, as you said earlier. And once you do that, I mean, I do journaling now. I've done counselling. I've done four sessions of counselling, or four different types of counselling with different counsellors through the
Okay.
years. And you're right about finding the right person and finding the one that suits you. That is really important. That's been the best thing that I've ever done, particularly in a A world that doesn't like to acknowledge weakness and doesn't like to examine the shadow world where it's all about putting up a front, etc. All this fakery, which you see everywhere, which doesn't help anyone when you can't acknowledge the reality of the situation. So you became your own therapist. How exciting was that for you? Because I remember really finding it quite exciting to go, wow, look at this. And obviously, I was going through a lot of turmoil, but it was like, wow, that's why I do that. Oh, there's a theory on this. That's interesting. You know, that kind of inquisitiveness. So, how was it for you?
Very similar. I was absolute, my whole world changed because I didn't know that you could do this. I was like, oh my God, wow. Because like you're saying, I started to self-reflection, started to look at my own shadow. And the information, I was like, oh, okay, well then I can change that, I can change that. I don't understand that, but and this is when my spiritual gifts and my power really kicked in because I saw my entirety of my shadow, all of it. And I thought, right, okay. Then what simultaneously happened was God connected with me and God said, right, I'm sending you on a mission. I'm like, oh God, here we go. What am I going to do? You're going to, and he said to me, you're going to go to Australia. I'm like, I'm going to what? You're going to go to Australia. And when you get there, you're going to go to, and he said, I want you to, God, I say, call God here. I'm sorry, it's habit because we're so mind polluted, aren't we, by schooling and God's always referred to us here. So that's just my conditioning coming out,
Yeah.
by the way. God is not a he or a she. So if I say that, please forgive me. It's just, it's
Yeah.
been drummed into me since I was 2 years old. And it just comes out naturally. God is, I normally call God an it because it's an energy. And that really, no, that normally freaks people out. Like, ah. You know, you call it God and it, and I'm like, yeah, it's an energy, that's why. But I was sent to Australia, and what I did was I got on a map and I just went like that and pointed to a place, and I ended up in Queensland. And when I was there, then God said to me, okay, I want you to find somebody, and you're going to go to the bushland, the countryside, and you're going to live in the countryside for 3 months.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're joking. And he's like, in a tent. I'm like, you're joking. And the reason and I was absolutely petrified because I had a huge fear of the dark. And here's God telling me that, you know what? You're going on a 3 month pilgrimage to the center of flipping Australia in the middle of nowhere, the country where everything's bloody dangerous, everything can kill you, eat you alive. You're going to go there. And I'm like, okay. And that's what I did. I went to Australia. I met the person. Who had lots of land. I went with him. His name was Michael. I said, Michael, I'm on a spiritual mission and I need to be in the wilderness for 3 months. He said, I've got so many hectares of land. You can come with me. I'm like, okay. And off I went. We arrived in the middle of the night, couldn't see anything, pitch black, went to walk out of the van. All I was hit by was all these random sounds. I just got back in the car and I shut it. I'm like, no, I'm not going nowhere. And he's like, come on, Karen, let's get out. I'm like, no. He's like, what do you mean? I said, no. He had a huge, one of those camper van things. I said, no. Can I sleep in here tonight? He's like, are you okay? I said, no, I'm absolutely petrified. I can't see anything. Look, and here is all these things. There could be bloody snakes there. I'm not getting out. You're not getting me out of this bloody van. And he pissed himself laughing. He couldn't stop laughing. He's like, okay, you bloody pongs are just all the same. Okay, you stay there. Right, no worries. Here's a blanket, here's a cushion. I'll see you in the morning. Fine. And then I woke up in the morning. I was just surrounded by trees. And I opened the door because I could see where I was then. I was like, oh my God. It was just in the middle of this forest in Queensland. And cut a short, cut, long story short, I was basically sent there by God. What happened was, for 3 months, I lived in a tent with no modern amenities. If you wanted to have a pee or a poo, you did it in the ground. There was no kitchen. There was a makeshift kitchen. You had to have shower in the wilderness with buckets of water. Okay, like I lived with the land. Okay, like a proper indigenous person, as humanity lived for centuries before we became so, before we became so-called civilized. You know, and what basically happened was that God took me under its wing and God said to me, right, I am your teacher, you are my student. I am going to teach you how to undo human conditioning. All the pain and suffering that you've gone through, I'm going to teach you how to undo it. And you're going to apply everything I teach you to yourself. Okay. So for 3 months, I would sit, God would talk to me, I would take notes, and then I would apply it. For 3 months, I did that. And then God said, right, now you're done. Now you go back to the civilization. Now you're going to apply that and you're going to help humanity evolve. That's what my
Wow.
name is.
Now, it's been a very emotional hour and 15 so far, and I think we'll start tying this episode up, if that's okay with
Okay,
you, Karan.
of course, of course.
But you go back to England and you've had this experience, and we're just going to very briefly touch on this event in Liverpool, which you found quite scary at first, but something happened at that event in Liverpool. Do you want to just tell us briefly about that?
So by now I had come back and I started to kind of explore different spiritual groups and meetup groups in Liverpool. And I don't remember the name of this one, but I was asked, they reached out to me actually, because I'd been a few times to a few of their group sessions, and I think they were very bowled over by what I was saying and how I was expressing myself. And so they said, would you like to come and do a public talk, for us? And I'm like, oh, okay. And then God said, yeah, do it. This is Go make yourself known to the world. I'm like, okay. Never done a public talk before. I was so nervous. And there was about 20 people or so that turned up. And all I did basically was talk about, like I'm talking now, talk about my journey. I mean, I was so nervous. And everybody in that room burst out crying. They couldn't stop crying because, what I went through. And I think the most powerful thing what was that they took away was that I healed myself. That I went from being so abused to accessing my own inner power and reveling in it and becoming that what I always was. I was always that powerful person. I just didn't know it. But how would I know it when everyone around is telling me I'm a piece of shit? How would I ever know it? So that's what I thought of myself. But obviously, when God took over my life and I started to fully listen and become one with that energy, I started to realize, no, I'm not a piece of shit. I'm actually an amazing and powerful human being. And so that was the first public talk I did. And it helped a lot of those people because a lot of those people, obviously, as you know, a lot of people turn to spirituality. And can I just say this, Tim, before we close this session? To all of those of you who are listening to this, their podcast, please be very aware that when you're looking, if you're somebody who's interested in exploring your spirituality, please be aware that you want to find a spiritual teacher that resonates with you. At the moment, globally, we are in a very challenging time period, okay? It's called the apocalypse. Apocalypse means the great unveiling. When all lies and deceptions are unveiled, and the truth of the reality of the universe and God and humanity is revealed to the world. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing
Beautiful.
the matrix construct starting to break down because it's all being built upon lies and deception. And nothing built upon lies and deception can ever last a long time because the foundation is weak, so it will collapse. So that's what we're, this is the time period that we're in now, historically. Millions of years by now, humanity will reflect on this time and it will be known as the great apocalypse of humanity. Okay? The great apocalypse will lead to the golden age of humanity. That's what we're moving towards. Okay. And I'll talk about that in other podcasts with you. But I just want to say this before we close. If you're somebody and that you've been inspired by today's podcast, or you've been inspired by anything that Tim or I have said, and you're interested in exploring your spirituality, please take your time to find a very good spiritual teacher. There are many spiritual teachers who are not what they say they are because you have to have done your own self-work. You can, and this goes the same with therapists. There are many therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists who've never done an ounce of self-reflection, who've never unpicked their own pain and suffering. And somebody like that cannot take you forward and help you heal. And a lot of the work that I do in the last few years is people, because I work on a global scale. I'm based in Tenerife, And and I work online, and I get so many people that come to me because they met some counselor or they met some spiritual teacher who said this, this, and this, and they've just been led down a flipping stupid path. And it's caused so much problems for them. Okay. So please, 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 due diligence, make wise choices when it comes to choosing people that you're going to work with. Okay. Because it's important. Because you don't want to be led down the garden path. You want to work with somebody who has clearly, done self-reflection, who's clearly worked through their own stuff and who constantly does that. Okay. And I just want to put that out there because I constantly get people who come to me and I have to undo the spiritual nonsense and the counseling nonsense that other therapists have put this individual through. Happens to me all the time. So please, please be careful. That's all I want to say.
Yeah, I
Because
mean
there's
the
many
due
good people.
absolutely. I mean the due diligence thing is important. Like t 10 years ago, if you'd have told me about Reiki, I'd have said, that's hocus pocus. I'm now a Reiki master. I went and I felt something and I felt healing. 25 years ago, if you'd have said like acupuncture is good for healing, I'd have said that's a load of nonsense. There's no evidence for it. And then someone said to me, you should try acupuncture, and my health significantly improved when I started doing acupuncture. But you are right, you have got to be very, very careful. And there's a lot of work done that even on Sam Harris. Sam Harris is a bit of an atheist, even on in his app, he talks to a lot of like people who've worked under certain teachers, etc. And all of a sudden the line is crossed and things can be. And in many ways, it's the big. I know that you say you're not a religious person in the traditional type, and a lot of spiritual people say that now. But there is a big issue with people who try to impose their ideas on others, and it's very much about what you're comfortable with. And people do need to be careful with that. But it's also the same with things like counseling and coaching, etc. You need to be careful who you go to the doctor. The person when you go to the GP can make or break you with a particular diagnosis or point you in the right direction. So it's not just about spiritual development. It's to do with life generally, isn't it? But can I know that I said to you when we first spoke, I said, I think we need to maybe do a few podcasts here because we want to get into a lot of depth. But thank you so much for opening up and talking about those very sensitive issues, but also about the way that you've turned that around to a positive. Because ultimately, one thing that we do know is that every day we live a day less, and finding that change in yourself to make yourself better. Life won't be perfect, but you can get better and better, and finding that route and that path of self-reflection and becoming better. You could say it's the meaning of life. What can you do to be better that day? And in the short, medium, and long term, it's such an important thing that people often neglect. You get caught up in life, and you don't look at what they are doing and why they are doing it. And I think that your story just shows that you can turn those negative traumatic experiences into positive experiences, learn from them, and better yourself. But I'm looking forward to our next conversation already.
Me too. Me too. Thank you
Brilliant.
so much. Thank you so much, Tim. Thank you. It's been such a real honor to talk to you, and I'm really glad that I've finally, because I've never spoken so honestly and so openly in a public sphere. It's taken me a long time to accept. I'm not a person that wants the limelight. I'm not, but unfortunately, it wants me. And I've been a very, very reluctant person to do that, but I'm just realizing more and more, Kieran, you've got to do it. This is what you're here for, regardless of whether you want it or not. This is your journey. Get on with it. So thank you so much. I'm really honored, and I think it's great talking to you. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. What I'll do, Kieran, I'll stop the recording and then we'll just have a little chat. But thank you very much for coming on. And listeners out there, again, just bear in mind what we've said. You can contact Kieran through, I'll put some contact details down as well. Let's think about what we're doing and let's make ourselves better. I don't think that there's any bigger purpose in life. So, Kieran, thank you very much for that inspirational story and for telling us what you do. Brilliant.